Hello, citizens of the Milky Way. My name is Dylan Hackworth.
And I'm Maureen Bogey.
And we are the hosts of the Creep Street Podcast.
Each week, we dive into a different aspect of the weird, whether that be cults, ghosts, true crime, anything paranormal, and so much more.
We're two Chicago comedians with a taste for the odd and the absurd. Infield poltergeist? Done it. Freaking terrifying.
Royal inbreeding? Covered it. Really f***ed up.
Black-eyed kids? We got one on them, too. Those little bastards are always up for a little ding-dong ditch.
Salem witch trials? Yeah, check the scoreboard. We got one on them, too. We'll talk all about those Real Housewives of New England.
So join us every Friday into our adventures into the macabre and unexplained. Creep Street Podcast. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Some of the voicemails he was leaving me were suicide threats or self-harm threats. One of them that I had answered was that he was standing on top of the bleachers in our stadium, and he was going to jump off if I didn't talk to him. He was going to kill himself. And that really worried me, and I did reach out to my professor about that one because I was worried he was actually going to do that. Other things, he would follow me around campus. Like, I would see him outside of my classroom buildings, and there was one particular instance when I was working one night that he was waiting for me outside of my building.
I'm Jamie Beebe.
And I'm Jake Deptula. On today's episode of Strictly Stalking, we're speaking with Jeanette, who was stalked by a college classmate.
While taking a Camping in the Wilderness class, Jeanette met a student who was being bullied by other classmates and befriended him.
For the class final, they hiked and camped on the Appalachian Trail in small groups, and the students got to know each other.
Soon after, the student started texting Jeanette, asking her to be his girlfriend and telling her he loved her.
She turned him down politely and let him know she was not interested, but he wouldn't stop contacting her.
He threatened suicide, followed her around campus, and reached out to her endlessly.
Jeanette went to her professor, who told her to ignore him, but things continued to escalate, and then he began showing up at her job.
After she called the police, his threats turned from self-harm to harming her. He even posted a message on Facebook offering money to anyone willing to strip Jeanette naked in public.
Jeanette, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your family life growing up?
So I grew up in Maryland, and my family just naturally is just super active. So I feel like I had a really great, wholesome, active childhood. You know, we traveled a lot. We did a lot of biking, hiking, pretty much spent my whole childhood outside. So it was wonderful.
What was it like starting out in college?
It was great. I had a great college experience. It went by way too fast. I ended up graduating a whole semester early, and I really wish in hindsight I hadn't done that because it was so wonderful. I'm like, man, I grew up too fast. But I made a lot of friends. People might laugh at the fact that I got a major in communications, but it was in a track of media production and journalism. So I spent most of my college career making movies and just doing that with my best friends. So it was great.
What was the social aspect like for you in college when you first started out?
Pretty normal. I mean, I wasn't a big partier, but I would go to parties, have fun. Our university was close to the beach. So anytime we finished classes early or had the afternoon to ourselves, we would hit the beach, which was great. And yeah, I just made a lot of friends, had a good time. It's really stereotypical, great college experience life.
And how was college going before you took this wilderness class?
It was good. So as I mentioned before, I was on track to graduate a semester early. I just needed 3 credits to grad. I had like 3 random credits I needed to fill in order to graduate. So I had to pick a random class. I could take whatever I wanted. I think I was stuck between canoeing and then hiking and camping in the wilderness was the name of the class. And I chose that one. I chose hiking and camping in the wilderness. And I was really excited about it. I didn't know anyone in the class. I didn't know anyone who had taken it, but I did know that it involved a lot of outdoor time, which if you're out of the classroom, wonderful. And I was just looking forward to getting my degree early, saving some money on graduating a semester early, and yeah, embarking in adult life.
Tell us about starting your class and meeting your classmates.
The class started like any other class did. I met all my classmates on the first day. I remember where I sat in that class. I was more toward the back in the middle. And the person who ended up stalking me, he sat in the very front toward the left, right in front of the teacher. But it seemed like a lot of like-minded people in the class, a lot of people that were into the outdoors, that enjoyed being out of the classroom. I quickly picked up on the fact that, how do I explain him? I don't want to say anything insensitive. So I will describe him the way my professor explained something to me about him after a lot of things had happened, was the fact that in her experience as a professor, when there was a student with a disability, whether that was a physical one, an intellectual one, she would be, before the class started, she would get some sort of information from her, or from the school, notifying her how to accommodate this student. And that happened all the time. For a minor thing like ADHD to major things like someone being in a wheelchair. So when it came to him, she didn't receive anything at all. And she was deeply troubled by that after getting to know him and seeing how he was. And she did tell me she was mystified as to why she never received anything from him. And it was just, she looked at his record. There was just nothing of note that needed to be made aware for the teacher. But it was a very normal class experience. Nothing about him made me feel uncomfortable or weird or strange until that hiking class. So up until that point, I noticed that he was bullied by some of the other students, poked fun of, just things that shouldn't be happening in college. So I just felt like, I'll just be nice to him. Why not? We're adults at this point. Why are we still bullying people? And I noticed my professor picked up on that because we were always paired up in groups when it came to group projects. And I didn't mind. He was great. I mean, he was nice to me. I was nice to him. He was easy to get along with. He did his work. It wasn't like I was, you know, those stereotypical group projects where one person ends up doing all the work. Like, we shared all the work. So I never had any qualms with him, ever. It was totally normal. And I mean, granted, because there was something different about him socially, he would say and do some things that if someone else said them, I would take that as odd. But based on his behavior, it was more normalized. So I didn't ever feel weird about things he was saying to me until we had that hiking trip. Well, until after the hiking trip.
You basically took sort of a special interest in what this guy was going through, and especially other classmates and how they were treating him.
Yeah. I mean, it's college. We don't need to be laughing behind their back or making jokes at their expense to you know, make the person next to you laugh. That just, to me, is childish. And by the time we're seniors in college, that does not need to be happening. And I just saw somebody in a vulnerable position, and I didn't appreciate how he was being treated.
How long were you in class before the hiking trip?
I don't remember when the semester started, but I do remember that the hiking trip served as a type of a final for us. Like, we were taught how to do all of these wilderness skills leading up to the hiking class, and then the hiking trip. And then the hiking trip was where we were to exhibit all of our skills and show our professor what we learned, and that was the final. So that happened, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, like mid to late November of that semester. And I ended up graduating in mid-December. So everything that happened between him and I happened in a span of like 4 weeks. It was very explosive.
How well do you think that you knew him before you went on the hiking trip?
Not well. I mean, it was like an acquaintance that you get to know better than just passing someone on the street because you share a class with them and you do assignments with them. But that's as deep as our relationship got. You know, I didn't know the name of his parents, or I didn't know where he was from. Those types of details, I had no idea.
So although you were kind of working together a little bit in class, you weren't sharing details about your lives at all?
No.
Tell us about what that trip was like.
It was a great trip. I had a great time. So it was myself, the person who ended up stalking me, and then two other male classmates were in our small group. And the objective was to hike together. I believe it was 9 miles a day and reach the final destination at the end of each day. And the whole class would come together by the end of that night. And then we would make dinner, pitch tents, go to sleep. But we were assigned one tent per group. So this is where I think the average classmate relationship got a little bit more intimate, in the sense that I just shared a tent with him. Normally you don't share tents with your classmates, I guess. So we would spend the whole day hiking. So we that's where we got to know each other a little bit better, talked all day with our two other fellow group members, and then we would sleep in a tent together. I don't think I ever slept directly next to him, but I was in the tent. We were all in a roll like this. So, and then we did that for 2 nights and then 3 days. And then on the end of the third day, we rode back to campus in a big white van.
Were you ever uncomfortable sleeping in the tent with the other classmates?
No, not really. I did think it was strange that I was the only girl in my group, but I also felt very comfortable around my classmates. Like, there wasn't anyone who was creeping me out, and we all had there was a big friendship vibe amongst the class, just because we had spent the whole semester, you know, doing these mini hikes together, making fires together. So there's a lot more camaraderie than I think you would normally find if you're sitting in a math class. No offense to people that love math, but so I didn't feel uncomfortable, not during the trip, no.
Did you feel like you got closer to the other students during that trip and got to know them better? Were you guys talking a lot about your life and what was going on?
Yep. Yeah, I definitely felt like I got closer to my classmates. I'm still Facebook friends with a lot of them. Talked to one recently, actually. So it was a great class. I made some good friendships from it, and I am grateful for it in a sense. I probably wouldn't do it again if I could go back and do it over, obviously, but it was a cool experience.
How did things change on the ride back from the camping trip?
So the ride back is when things started to get strange for me and started to make me feel bad. I was sitting in the front of the van in between some classmates, and the stalker was sitting in the back, and he was texting me. And I thought it was weird because we were in the same vehicle. Like, he could have just been talking to me if he really wanted to have a conversation, but he was texting me, and the texts were pretty basic at first. Like, did you have a fun time? I really enjoyed our hiking trip. I'm really glad we got to do that together. And I'm catering to his questions. Like, yeah, this is great. I'm glad I had you in my group too. This was fun. Woohoo. But by the time we had gotten back to campus and I was driving back to my house, the text had turned into, I love you. I want you to be my girlfriend. And I'm just like, whoa, okay, no, you do not love me. And that's what I said. I said, you know, I had a great time with you, and I'm really grateful we had this experience together, but this isn't love. I had a boyfriend at the time, so I probably used that phrase, you know, I have a boyfriend. I'm grateful you're my friend, and let's keep it at that. Yeah, I thought he would have a little bit hard of a time accepting that answer, based on just how he was, but I didn't expect it to turn into what it did. which was immediately. Endless phone calls, endless text messages. And when I say endless, I mean endless. Like, my phone was always ringing, always beeping. And this was before I had a smartphone. Maybe other people did, but I was really behind the times with technology. So I did not have a smartphone. So I was trying to remind myself, how did I end up blocking him? Because I don't think it was as simple as just finding his contact info and blocking him. I don't remember. But it took a few days for me to end up blocking him. But in those few days, it was all the time, to the point where I had to turn my phone off. And I would answer some of them and ask him to please stop calling me. But obviously, that didn't work. And, you know, replying to his text messages didn't work either. But I would respond to a few of them at first, trying to get him to stop. And when it became clear that he wasn't going to stop, I just would turn my phone off and then eventually figured out how to block his number.
If you've learned anything from this show, it's that criminals are creative.
That's for sure. We have to be one step ahead of them to stay safe. You certainly can't hide your house key under the doormat anymore.
Definitely not. You need a home security system that has the technology to outsmart the criminals. That's why we use and trust SimpliSafe.
SimpliSafe's advanced technology stops intruders in their tracks and provides layer on layer of 24/7 protection.
I love that I can easily control my whole SimpliSafe system right from my phone. I can watch the cameras, set the alarm, and even lock or unlock the door.
The SimpliSafe Smart Lock is my favorite feature. I go out of town a lot and always have a house sitter to watch my dog. With the Smart Lock, I can keep tabs on who's coming and going, and if there's an emergency, I can remotely lock or unlock my door from anywhere in the world just using my phone.
And in an emergency, the SimpliSafe monitoring agents really care about your safety and well-being. They're highly trained to help keep you calm and safe during stressful situations, and they stay on the line with you until help arrives.
And best of all, it's affordable with plans starting at less than a dollar a day and no long-term contract or hidden fees, because feeling safe at home shouldn't be expensive.
We both use, trust, and recommend SimpliSafe because your safety is important to us.
Customize the perfect system for your home in just a few minutes at simplisafe.com/stalking.
Go today and claim a free indoor security camera plus 20% off with interactive monitoring.
That's simplisafe.com/stalking. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. We listen to a lot of true crime podcasts.
Right, but there's only one Murderific.
Join host Bernadette as she covers true crime cases all the way from her home state of Maine to the ones that go global.
She explores the whole scope of true crime, including missing persons, serial killers, mass murders, and domestic abuse cases.
This season, Murderific exposes the cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, most recently focusing on the tragic murder of 15-year-old Tina Fontaine from Winnipeg, Canada.
Bernadette dives into the often overlooked facts about the poverty, marginalization, and racism that puts Indigenous women and girls at greater risk of violence.
Subscribe now because there's over 60 episodes to binge, bringing you deeper into the true crime world than you've ever been before.
We love listening to Murderific, and we know you will too.
Murderific is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. What was the content of these text messages and phone calls in the first few days?
He was upset that I didn't love him back, but trying to really drive the point home that he loved me and that he wanted us to be friends. He was sorry. It was like always these back and forth things. Like, he was sorry he was making me uncomfortable, but he really wanted me to love him back. And just, it seemed like he was very conflicted in his own mind, and he was projecting that into his text messages and voicemails, just like, I love you, but I'm mad at you, but let's be friends, I'm sorry, but I'm not, you know. So, yeah, just a lot of mixed signals, a lot of mixed feelings he was portraying through his messages.
And how did things continue once you blocked him?
He ended up just continuing to call me through friends' phone numbers. And so it didn't really end. I mean, granted, he didn't have as much access to me because he had to rely on when his friends would allow him to use his phone, their phones, but it still kept coming. And And at first, it was numbers I didn't recognize, so I'd answer them. And sometimes it would be his friends. And they'd be like, why don't you love him? Why aren't you responding to him? I think he was painting me as a very villainous woman to his friends, and they were trying to help him out, I think. So I don't know. I'm not interested in him. You know, just everything I was already saying to him, I would have to now repeat to his friends. And so I would eventually just stop answering any random phone call that came through my phone.
Were you still in class with him at this time?
I was. So pretty shortly after these phone calls started, again, this all happened in a span of 4 weeks. So when I say pretty shortly, it was probably a few days later. I went to my professor and I told her what was going on, and she was very receptive to what I had told her. She told me, just ignore him. Do not feed into him at all. Don't answer his calls. And I said, well, we're in class together. You know, I'm going to see him. And she said, just ignore him. I'm like, okay. So I go to class. Of course, that next day after I have this conversation with my professor, he comes in with a bouquet of flowers for me. My classmates didn't know what was going on. And the whole nature of the class, you know, he was the butt of everyone's joke. So when he walks in with the bouquet of flowers for me, they immediately start like hooting and hollering and whistling like, oh, Jeanette, what you gonna say to him? And I was mortified because here I was trying so hard to make this person feel accepted in this class. And now I'm the one in front of everybody having to humiliate him. By saying no, I had to say no, I don't want your flowers. Please leave me alone in front of the whole class. And he ran out in tears and I felt terrible. I didn't want that. I didn't want to make him feel that way. That's what I had been trying to prevent or make up for based on my other classmates' behavior. So that was hard.
And so after that incident, what was the next thing that happened?
A collaboration of things. So some of the voicemails he was leaving me were suicide threats or self-harm threats. One of them that I had answered was that he was standing on top of the bleachers in our stadium, and he was going to jump off if I didn't talk to him. He was going to kill himself. And that really worried me, and I did reach out to my professor about that one because I was worried he was actually going to do that. Other things, he would follow me around campus. Like, I would see him outside of my classroom buildings.
Tell us about the incident when you were a lifeguard and you found him lurking outside.
So I was lifeguard, and the way our pool was/is that it, like, 3/4 of it were windows. And at night, when you're inside the pool, when you looked out a window, all you could see was your reflection. But when you're outside the building, you could just see straight in, like a fishbowl. And so I was closing up. I was the only one working. I was closing the pool for the night. The pool was attached to the gym. The gym had shut down for the night. So everyone that worked at the gym was gone. And I was alone. I was about to leave when I looked out and saw where my bike was parked. And I saw him standing next to it. And I immediately just felt so uncomfortable. This situation does not feel safe to me. So there's a guard room in the middle of the pool area that has no windows. And it's got a door. So once you go inside, no one can see you. So I went in there, but as soon as I was in there, I realized, well, he can't see me anymore, but I also can't see him, so I don't know where he is. Luckily, the pool was locked, so I wasn't worried about him necessarily getting inside, but I was worried that he would just continue to wait around for me until I got out. So I just remember being really upset. At this point, a few friends knew what was going on, but I didn't want to be a bother. I didn't want them to worry about me or have to go out of their way to cater to me because of this issue I was dealing with. So I remember mentally battling with myself, like, do you call someone or do you just wait this out? Is this even a big deal to begin with? But I just remember how nervous I felt and how freaked out I felt. And I was like, I think this is a situation where I do need to tap into my friends. So I called them, and one of them owned a pickup truck. So he came and to the pool with his pickup truck. And something that the stalker ended up doing over this course of time, and honestly over the whole semester, he had been befriending my own friends. So they knew him. They were all friends with him on social media. So when he saw my friend approaching, he ran away. He recognized him. He knew who he was. He ran away. So my friend was able to load my bike into the back of his truck and give me a ride home. And the incident ended without further incident.
By this time, did most of your friends and family know about what you were dealing with?
My friends did. I can't remember when I told my mom, but she eventually found out. I eventually told her what was going on too. But yes, I was quick to tell people, especially because, as I mentioned, he had been befriending my friends too. So he was making comments to them about me. I had to fill them in on what was going on. And I am grateful that I did that.
What made you decide to go to the police?
So that was when everything kind of came to a head, or I visualize it as just like the climax of everything that happened. As I mentioned, he had made a lot of self-harm threats. And when he made that bleacher threat, I had reached out to my professor, who then, you know, took some further action on her end with the university and the police. They did a welfare check on him. And he got really mad about that. He did not like the fact that they had shown up to his dorm and knew about what was going on and was asking him some questions. So by this point, you know, I had blocked him on everything I possibly could. So I wasn't aware of what he was posting on social media. And it feels very movie-like as I remember it, because it was such a bad storm. And I'm sitting in my house alone. It's dark and stormy and just, you know, the perfect setup for something scary to happen. But I'm studying and my friend calls me and he said, hey, where are you? And I said, I'm home. He's like, are you alone? I said, yeah. And he said, I'm coming to get you. Stay where you are. He just posted something really freaky on his Facebook page. I don't like it. I'm coming to get you. And so as I was waiting for him to come get me, I unblocked him so I could see what he posted. He said, I offer an award for $1,000 to anyone who knows a group of people I can meet with to do a job for me. This job involves a girl in my camping class being stripped in public. And obviously that's a really dumb thing to post on Facebook, but he did it. And obviously, it scared my friend enough to come pick me up, and I spent the night at his house. And then that following day, my mom came and spent the rest of my college career with me at my house. How fun, my mom. And I love her to death that she did that, but that's not how anyone wants to spend the final days of their college career. So to answer your question, Jamie, that is when I went to the police, is once he posted that and I had to give a statement and have a very long conversation with them about what was going on.
And what was giving the statement to the police like?
That was when I realized how serious my situation was. Obviously, it was bothersome, scary at times, frustrating, annoying, but I didn't understand that it might be dangerous for me until I talked to the police and he was taking my statement and I made a comment that I didn't want him. I forget how I came to say this, but I just mentioned, I was like, I don't want this person to hurt or kill himself. And I will never forget this. The cop was like slouched over his desk and he just looked at me and he was like, I'd rather have a suicide than a murder suicide. And I was taken aback by that, because I never even thought that was my words made him jump to that conclusion, or at least think that that might be something that could possibly happen. That scared me. And unfortunately, and ironically, 2 years after I graduated, that very thing happened to two students within the college I went to. It was a murder-suicide based on some stalking behavior. So it definitely feels like there's an issue there that needs to be addressed. But I'm lucky that that didn't happen to me.
So once you felt the gravity of this situation, you knew how serious it was. What changed in your life?
So within days I was graduating, I was asked if I wanted to take a restraining order out on him. I was recently reading my police report just to freshen up on like the minute details, and it said that I said no. But I know that the university had taken some sort of action on him, I think on my behalf or something they were obligated to do, because he was asked to leave campus. He was not allowed to come back on campus. And I felt safer once my mom was with me. But at graduation, based on alphabetical order, he ended up sitting directly in front of me.
What happened at graduation?
So I had to get, you know, if anyone has ever graduated from something, it's mostly waiting in line until it's your turn. So getting to the building, standing in line, making sure you've got your cap and gown on correctly. I knew he would be there, and I was terrified the entire time I was waiting that he was going to come around a corner or I'd bump into him on my way to the bathroom. I never saw him, but that fear was so prevalent the whole time I was getting ready to graduate. And then filing into the auditorium and taking my seat, the person in front of me is him, directly in front of me. Based on where our last names fell on the alphabet, he happened to be in the very seat before me. So I have no memories of my graduation aside from the back of his head. You know, I know I walked across the stage and received my diploma and took a picture, but I don't remember any of that. I just remember seeing the back of his head. I don't remember who gave a speech, nothing. I think I was just so scared, I guess is a good word. Just upset that he was there. Not that I don't think he deserved to graduate, but that we were in the same building at the same time, me sitting behind him, that should have never happened. So that was the last time I saw him, though, in person. That wasn't the last time I had contact with him, but that was the last time I saw him in person.
What happened after graduation?
I moved immediately. I had wanted to move. I knew that was going to happen anyways, but the immediacy that I moved, I think definitely he played a part in that. I got out of there, out of that town as fast as I could. And he knew which city I was moving to, but he had mentioned many times that if I ever moved there, he would never see me again. And I didn't think he would actually have the means to come find me in person, so I wasn't super worried about that, like him physically following me. And he didn't know specifically, you know, where I was moving to. He just knew the general area.
When you reestablished yourself in the new city, what were some of the things that you did when you landed there?
Well, I immediately took up kickboxing. I got super into just self-defense. Like, I carried a knife on me, carried mace, you know, punched a punching bag at least 3 times a week and kicked it. Went running, just kind of turned into some sort of like, did some assassin training or something, just like went hard on keeping myself safe because I was officially in a town where I did not know anybody. I moved there knowing not a soul except my roommate that I met on Facebook. So I was completely on my own, and I've kept up the physical fitness aspects of those practices, but I don't feel as on guard as I did back then now.
Mm-hmm.
Strictly Stalking is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
I multitask everything all day, every day. I listen to my podcast while I hike my dog, I watch TV while I clean my house, and I text my friends while I'm working.
But let's face it, sometimes multitasking can be overwhelming, like when I'm chewing gum and walking at the same time.
Oh, Jake, you've got all the good dad jokes today. But one easy way to multitask is to get a quote from Progressive Insurance. They've already done all the hard work of comparing rates, so you can find the great rate that works for you, even if it's not with them.
That's right. Give their nifty comparison tool a try, and you might just find getting the rate and coverage you deserve is easy.
Just go to Progressive's website at progressive.com to get a quote with all the coverages you want. There's comprehensive and collision coverage or personal injury protection.
You'll see Progressive's direct rate, and the comparison tool will provide options from other companies all lined up and ready to compare. So it's simple. Choose the rate and coverages you like.
It's so easy to use that you could definitely chew gum, walk, and get a quote from Progressive all at the same time.
And join the over 27 million drivers who trust Progressive. That's what I call multitasking.
So go to progressive.com today to find a great rate that works for you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
We are Wendy and Beth, and we host the podcast Fruit Loop Serial Killers of Color. Tell the people about the show, Wendy.
Well, happy to. As you might have guessed by now, our show focuses on serial killers of color. We decided to make this the focus of our show because most of the podcasts that we listen to focus on whole white serial killers, also male, cisgender, hetero serial killers. And we thought the space could use a little spice, a little diversity.
Yeah, and we believe that the victim stories are important. Many of the victims are also BIPOC folks, and the media just doesn't focus on these people.
We also get plenty of opportunities to discuss race, race relations, systemic oppression, policing, history, and culture. We learn something new every day, and we hope that you do too.
Join us as we tell the fascinating stories of these crimes that often go untold by the mainstream media. Subscribe or download Fruit Loop Serial Killers of Color now on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look alive, y'all. It's crazy out there.
Have you seen or heard from him since graduation?
Yes, I have not seen him in person, but he, just because I moved didn't mean that he was done with me. So I heard from him often initially online. And then gradually over time, those points of contact would, like the time in between hearing from him would just grow a little bit longer and longer each time. The last time I heard from him was 2019. And, you know, those hearing from him would be various forms like DMs, Facebook messages, friend requests. And I feel like I don't have to say it, but I will. Like, I blocked so many of his accounts, changed my name on social media, went private, you know, did all the things aside from deleting myself completely off of social media. But that doesn't deter people like that. He just kept making new profiles and finding me. I actually ended up deleting my Twitter completely because of him. But other than that, just trying to stay as anonymous as possible. And then when I decided to publish a book, I knew I needed to become more present and not anonymous online if I wanted it to be somewhat successful and market it correctly. So I was very nervous about that. That was a big mental roadblock for me to get over, but just taking off those private filters and taking my name off too, you know, my full name, and no, any semblance of my last name could not be found on social media, which is helpful.
What was the content in the messages when he was reaching out to you after you had moved?
Just similar to the phone calls I was receiving from him shortly after he got obsessive, was just, I miss you, I love you, I'm sorry, I hate you, how dare you. Just really strong-worded, very emotional messages. How are you? And then even just him friend requesting me bothered me because it meant that he was still thinking about me. Like months, a year would go by, and then I'd get a friend request from him on Snapchat, and I'd be like, you're still thinking about me, dude. Stop. So that's just that was really frustrating for me.
Do you know why he was taking his breaks, or were you checking up on him as well?
As far as I know, all of my friends kind of unfriended him and distanced themselves from him after everything that went down. So I didn't have anyone in direct contact with him that I could check in with. So my keeping tabs on him consisted of me just Googling his name. So I could kind of get an idea for what he was up to, but I didn't know specifically what was going on. Like, I knew he moved down to Florida for a little bit and was doing something. So no, I mean, in detail, no, I don't know what he was up to.
When was the last time you heard from him, and do you think that you're going to hear from him again?
Well, the last time I heard from him was in 2019 via that Snapchat friend request. I really hope I don't hear from him again. I think that's something I've been trying to grapple with right now, is just, is this over or is it not over? Because as I mentioned, every time I've heard from him, it's gone longer and longer in between contact. So I'm like, maybe this is just the longest period of time that I haven't heard from him. But I also think it's been a really long time now, 3 years. So maybe I'm in the clear. I feel like I can start healing from it. But there is a piece of me that always wonders, like, maybe you shouldn't start healing from it yet. Maybe you should still stay on your guard. And I think a piece of me will always stay on my guard. But I do want to start putting this behind me and not feel like it's something I'm currently dealing with.
When you look back on your college experience and all the systems that were in place to sort of protect or help you, do you feel pretty comfortable with the level of support and security that you got when you were dealing with this?
No. Nope. I think universities can do a lot more to intervene early. And, you know, it doesn't need to get to the point it did with me in order for there to be intervention outside of my own control or outside of what the professor can control within her classroom. And maybe I didn't tap into resources I knew were available to me. I know, like, the police officer that took my statement handed me some pamphlets on what to do and how to get help. But that had been after I had a hit taken out on me. So I didn't necessarily think that was the best way to handle the situation. And then again, seeing what happened 2 years later to the other students, I definitely think there's an issue there. Maybe it's not across the board at every university, but I do think universities can all benefit from sitting down and looking at their policies and discovering where they're lacking and how they can better protect students that are getting harassed by fellow students.
What do you think needs to happen to him?
I think his family or the people that surround him need to acknowledge that he needs help. I think he isn't going to ever walk in himself and admit he needs help. So I think that his people need to do that and acknowledge it. And then I also think I want to see him get help and then leave me alone. I just want to read my books, write my stories, and be a happy person. So I want him to leave other people alone too. Like, I can't imagine if he's harassing other people. Obviously, that's a terrible thought. So I really just hope he's leaving people alone. He goes and gets help, and then he leaves me alone.
What are some of the other things that you've had to deal with on a mental health level in this situation?
Well, I was recently diagnosed with PTSD because of it, which I think I had suspected I had had, but to receive official diagnosis was enlightening. So working through that, you know, going to therapy, I feel there, you know, the sacrifices I make because of this that I don't really even think about now, that I know aren't normal for someone that isn't stalked. Sometimes I have to mentally remind myself, like, you know, it's not normal, or this isn't necessarily someone else's knee-jerk reaction. Just kind of working through all of that. It's been 7 years, or it's been a total of 7 years that since it happened to where the last time I heard from him. So, you know, I own a big scary dog. I married a 6'5 college basketball star. And I can't help but wonder, like, you know, I surround myself with big things. I do things that feel empowering. And like, you know, and I love it, obviously. No regrets, but if this hadn't happened to me, would I have a different mindset? Would I look at life differently? Would I have a different approach to things? Maybe, maybe not. And I don't think it's worth pondering too much because I am very happy with where my life is, but I wonder sometimes.
What advice do you have for somebody else that might be going through this in college?
I would say something I'm really grateful I did was tell my friends and family as soon as I could. I think the more people that know, the stronger and thicker your safety net will get. And not only just friends and family, but if you work somewhere, like had I told my employer, I might have had someone there with me that night. Or, you know, the gym would have stayed open until I closed the pool. So just thickening your safety net is really important. And then the university should have resources available to you to stay safe in these instances. I might not have been aware of them or sought them out appropriately. So utilize everything that your university gives you. I mean, you're paying enough money to go there, use them and challenge them too. If you think they're lacking, and I know it's saying a lot because you're dealing with a stalker, but maybe even have friends that can advocate for you in the moment. Just make sure you've got your people doing what they can for you in the moment.
And why did you decide to come forward and tell your story?
I do feel like I'm coming out of the fog, and a big piece of healing is sharing my story, because you never know who can resonate with it or learn from it. You know, this might sound really silly. I made a really silly TikTok about this, just making light of ridiculous things I heard about being stalked. And it's almost at 1 million views. But one of the things I was taken aback by, one is I learned about you guys, strictly stalking. But two is just how many other people are going through this. And we all have different stories and everyone's story is different. But oh my goodness, the feelings we feel are all so similar. Mainly, why do I have to be the one to change my life because someone decides they're obsessed with me? And that is something, I don't know what the solution is there, but we're all feeling it. Every victim of stalking is feeling that way. And it was very empowering, though, to read through the comments and see what women and men are doing to stay safe. And I think the more you share your story, the more diluted their power becomes over you, because it's more people that know. Thickening your safety net, calling them out. You know, we're not going to say their real name on here, but they know who they are. And they're now on a big platform where you guys have an impressive amount of listeners that tune in every week to hear your stories. That's intimidating.
Can you tell us about making the TikTok video?
Yeah, had I known it was going to blow up like that, I wouldn't have danced like an idiot. But yes, so there's a trend going around where you play this joyful song and, you know, you dance joyful. But over top of that, you're putting quotes of kind of bizarre or horrible things people have said to you. And it's usually related to a specific theme. So I'm watching people do this and like, oh, I have like 1 million things I can put when it comes to being stalked. So I did. I just put a couple up there and turned my, I mean, I go on TikTok once a week, maybe. So I didn't really look at it much. And when I came back, it had blown up. And man, it's just, I tackle tough stuff by being silly. And I'm grateful that I did that publicly, because it was really nice. Not, I hate that so many people could relate to it, but it was empowering to feel not so alone. I did have a moment when it hit about 500,000 views where I got a little scared that he might see it, because I have not encountered him on TikTok yet. So I'm like, maybe he's out here and he might see this, but I don't want to let my fear, I want to live my life with wisdom, not fear. So I just kind of kicked that into the back of my head and let it continue its course. And yeah, it's almost at 1 million views right now. And the conversations coming out of it are so great. People are sharing advice on how to stay safe, what to do to remain anonymous if you must or if you feel safe doing that. People are talking about how frustrating it is to become anonymous to stay safe and why do we have to do this? Yeah, a lot of people can relate. I was grateful that it blew up the way it did, as weird as it was, because I found you guys and I'm able to share my story here. And I am really, really grateful that you've given me the chance to do that.
And we're grateful you're here. Jeanette, what is life like for you now?
It's great. I mean, I'm an author, so I get to spend my days writing my stories and promoting my children's book that's out. So that's been wonderful. And then, I mean, it's summertime. It's hot. So staying cool, going to the pool, and traveling around. Now that the pandemic's starting to simmer down a little bit, getting back out into the world and exploring it again.
If we want to find out more about your book or information, where do we turn?
Thank you for asking. That's really kind. Annie and Khalil is the name of the book. It's a children's book about siblings that grow up in a multiracial sibling dynamic. So it's a little bit of a niche there, but it's a good one. I recommend it. I wonder why. But it's on Amazon, so you can find it there.
Jeanette, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, guys. This is great. And I do want to say thank you to everyone on TikTok who told me to reach out to you guys. I really appreciate those people and everyone that was showing support.
And we're really glad that you reached out. If anyone out there is in need of help or is a victim of stalking, please reach out. You can find a list of resources on our Instagram at Strictly Stalking Pod.
If you'd like to share your story with us on Strictly Stalking, you can reach us at strictlystalkingpod@gmail.com. That's strictlystalkingpod@gmail.com.
As a listener of Strictly Stalking, please leave a review and rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, CastBox, or wherever you listen.
I'm Jake Deptula.
And I'm Jamie Beebe. Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Strictly Stalking.
I'm Lola Blanc.
And I'm Megan Elizabeth.
And we're the hosts of Trust Me, the podcast about cults, extreme belief, and the abuse of power.
Now on Podcast One.
We're real-life cult survivors.
And we're here to tell you anyone can join a cult.
If you've ever dived headfirst into a new self-help program,
or believed wholeheartedly in a spiritual practice,
or even just trusted someone with your life,
guess what? You're just as susceptible as everyone else.
No one is safe, especially not Megan.
I'm the most susceptible.
We want to debunk the myth that people who join cults are uneducated or naive or broken, because anyone can be manipulated by a narcissist or feel good in a new group they've joined.
And we should know, we both have been.
Join us every week as we explore the world of extreme belief,
talk to survivors and experts,
and share our own experiences with cults and the abuse of power.
Don't be fooled, you might be next.
Get new episodes of Trust Me every Wednesday on Podcast One, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere you get your podcasts.